Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I have my friend who is one of the greatest breakdancers ever to live. I'm not sure if people knew that about you, but this is my buddy Jason McClellan.
Greetings, good sir.
Now, I've heard that's true. Is it?
You can't believe everything you hear.
Oh, that damn internet.
And I can't necessarily refute that claim because it's possible that that was true in a previous life. I don't remember any previous lives, so I guess it's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I will let you know, and I guess it's a possibility in this life too. But
mm-hmm.
I don't recall ever breakdancing, and I think if I did, there would be lots of bones breaking. So,
Well, I do want to say, you know, that reminds me. Merry Christmas to everybody, or Happy Holidays, and both, or whatever you prefer. But it reminds me of, you know, a Christmas song I forgot, and I was listening to NPR, and they asked this lady what was her favorite Christmas song. And the breakdancing reminds me of, you know, back in the day in the 80s when people were breakdancing on the street, including my cousins. They were listening to Run DMC, and Run DMC has one of the coolest Christmas songs ever. So I hope everybody has a cool hip-hop Run DMC Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's very, very nice of you to wish that for people. That's,
yeah.
That's a high-energy Christmas.
Yeah, and I hope, you know, people go out to the garage and bust out some cardboard like we used to do it old-school style in the 80s. For those of you who didn't live in the 80s, you know, we bust out some big pieces of cardboard, slap that on the ground on the side of the street. You know, I don't care if you live in a suburb in Scottsdale or something. Bust out that, if you're in the UK or Australia or wherever, bust out that cardboard, put it in the street, put on some Run DMC, what was the song called, Christmas in Hollis or something like that, and start rolling and break dancing. And if you're not very good, you know, try it. All you have to do is spin. You can lay down on the ground on your back and you have a buddy grab your foot. You ever done this one? You have a buddy grab your foot and they just run around in circles. So you're kind of doing the spin move, and you don't have to be too talented to be able to do that. And, you know, you just have a good break dance Christmas. I hope everybody does that because that's the American way.
I'm suspecting you've been paid off by a chiropractor encouraging people to go out and try this.
No, I'm just inspired by Run DMC and you and your breakdancing skills, and I think everybody needs to have a happy, you know, hip-hop, rap, American-type Christmas because that reminds me of some good times when I was a kid. So that's what I wish for everybody. You want to give a Christmas wish for everybody?
No, I don't.
What? You hate Christmas?
I hate Christmas so much, bah humbug.
Oh, man,
no,
we got
no,
a Scrooge.
There's nothing to say other than wishing everybody fantastic holidays.
Well,
we wish that.
Yeah. Good job. That's
and
nice.
Going beyond that, I hope everybody sees a UFO on Christmas. That would be amazing.
That would be great. What about this? What's your favorite Christmas song?
My favorite Christmas song.
And so la la Christmas. I like that, the John Lennon one.
I don't know. I think right now I have a bad taste of Christmas songs because I just had to sit in the car and listen to you singing Christmas songs. So
that's true.
I'm trying to get them out of my mind.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. Or one of my favorites that gets stuck in my head. It's the most wonderful time of the year. What about any of those? Any of those your favorite? I know you. They're all, whatever song I'm Christmas song I'm singing. That's your favorite.
No, I'm sorry.
I gotta warn you though. I'm gonna learn the words to Run DMC Christmas. I'm gonna be rapping that all day tomorrow. Might do some breakdancing.
I am not coming into work tomorrow.
Okay, you've been forewarned. All right, our guest for this evening, I want to talk about a little bit, and this is a really cool guy.
Okay.
Our guest today is named Damian Lopez, and this is kind of cool. This is a little different. He is doing this thing called Tell Me a Story. It's a Kickstarter that he started. It's this interactive sci-fi kind of experience. What I like about it is, you know, comics have kind of gone online where you can read like Garfield type of stuff or whatever online, but it's kind of images online, which is cool because the artwork's beautiful and everything. But what he's done is taken this a step further and integrated videos and things like that and choose your own adventure. So I don't know about you guys, but I don't know about you, Jason. You probably did this. Choose Your Own Adventures were really fun books.
Yes, Choose Your Own Adventures, awesome.
You know, I had this Bigfoot one, too, I used to dream about all the time, coming around the corner and seeing a Yeti. It was a really cool one when I was a kid. But this is kind of Choose Your Own Adventure online, where, you know, you play these videos, and whichever way you choose, you go into these different worlds done by different artists and have different experiences. So it's really cool, and he emailed us, and he said, you know, I'd like to talk about it. So I said, I figured, what the heck, because I love his artwork and stuff, too. And he says he's really inspired by stories of UFOs and aliens and his interest in UFOs and everything, and cases like, you know, Whitley Strieber and Betty and Barney Hill and stuff like that. So we're talking to him about this project and what inspired him and how he got into UFOs and things like that. And I think it's interesting because, you know, we talk a lot about UFOs and aliens getting into pop culture, and this is an example. Hopefully this does well for him, and this is the beginning of something big and new, but talk to him about what really inspired him, you know, to integrate UFOs and aliens and everything into it and why he feels, you know, that all of this is important. So it's a lot of fun. So we'll be talking to him in a minute. But before we do that, as usual, Jason and I like to talk about our favorite news stories of the week. And Mr. Jason McClelland, what was your favorite UFO news story?
Well, Alejandro, I'm going to have to go with something. I don't know if this is necessarily my favorite story of the week, but I do enjoy, over the past few years, we've had some interesting descriptions of UFOs, and I'm always kind of amused when there's a new description for a UFO. You know, we hear a lot about disc UFOs and cigar UFOs and fireball UFOs, and I think maybe a year ago, I think it was in England, there was something like, I think it was like a hamburger UFO, shark UFOs.
Dorito.
So last week we had a story to come out about a black blob UFO. And number one, that's just fun to say, black blob. But a black blob UFO. This is an interesting photo. The photo was taken in a town of Ellensburg, Washington, state of Washington, on Tuesday last week. And the witness described it, saying that it expanded and contracted like some kind of jagged geometric puffer fish. That's a great description. Sounds pretty exciting. The witness sent this photo to local paper, Daily Record, and she and her husband saw it and said that they estimated it was flying at approximately 1,000 feet in the sky. They watched it, took a few pictures of it, and they got good pictures of it, which is unusual. It was great to see, and were able to zoom in and get quite a bit of detail on this object. And yeah, it is crazy looking, all jagged, and it's a very good description, like a puffer fish. But looking at this, Alejandro, I would say that to me it looks like, and to others, it looks like a bunch of black garbage bags tied together and either filled with helium themselves or filled with balloons, helium-filled balloons on these bags, just kind of drifting through the sky. So this was a really interesting sighting, a really interesting photo, but thanks to the detailed photo, can look at this. It's on our website, and I don't know. I'd like to hear what other people think, but I definitely think it looks like a bunch of garbage bags.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a weird-looking picture. It's kind of striking, and that's what makes it really fun. But when you blow it up, luckily it's a pretty good resolution picture. But when you blow it up, it does look like a bunch of garbage bags. And if so, which I'm sure it is, it must be huge because I would estimate, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 7 garbage bags in length. And these black garbage bags, of course, are pretty big. So this thing has to be really big. So I'm sure it was pretty startling when they saw it. Why they might have done this with garbage bags, I don't know. You had a couple ideas.
Well, I think the paper did a good job. They contacted local colleges and stuff to see if anybody was doing like science experiment or something like that, because that would make sense, I guess.
Yeah.
Those experiments launched some weird things in the sky, and along the lines of what a student project would do.
Yeah.
But from what they were able to determine, nobody was doing any sort of experiments like that at the time.
Yeah.
So, I don't think anybody's come forward with this. No explanation, no group losing a bunch of garbage bags. And you know, the only thing I could think of was, you know, if there was a celebration of sorts that planned to release helium balloons into the sky as part of the celebration, which I don't condone. That's terrible for the environment and poor animals choke on these things.
Yeah.
But if they were to do that, it would make sense to have them puffed up and stored in big bags before they were to release them. And then all the bags would be tied together. And then that got away.
Yeah.
That's one theory.
If that did happen, that's kind of funny. But that is certainly at least some sort of possible explanation for why whoever launched these garbage bags. Or maybe they just wanted to build this huge floating thing for fun. Maybe they even wanted to spur, you know, UFO sightings. Who knows? But, yeah, it makes for a very interesting picture.
It does. It's not something you see every day in the sky. It looks really bizarre. And, again, we have no idea what it is. It's just a possibility that it could be bags tied together because that's what it looks like. Thanks to the picture, we can make that that guess based on its appearance because of this detailed photo. But we don't know.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. And I really want to thank Coast to Coast who posted our link, our story on this, which is really cool.
Right.
And they've posted another couple recently. So we really appreciate that. So just want to say thank you to Coast AM.
Definitely. All
yep.
right, Alejandro, what's your story? I have a hunch. I know which story is yours, but go
I want
for
to
it.
Hear your guess.
Oh, I would guess you're going to talk about something politics related.
You are correct, because I'm really into politics and stuff. I do want to mention, though, to thank also Ben Hansen, who sent us this video that we got, you know, while we were all at the Skywatch nearby in Phoenix with the Phoenix MUFON. You can read about that. That turned out to be satellites, but it's still a really interesting story. However, yes, I want to talk about John Podesta, who was Bill Clinton's chief of staff. And he helped with the Obama transition into office in 2008. And we've written about him before because it's an exciting thing about him is that he has been a UFO advocate and a sci-fi buff. And he was really into the X-Files. He made some news while he was working for Clinton when he had an X-Files-themed birthday party. And he also then had been part of this press conference that that Leslie Kane had put together in 2002 as part of a coalition for the freedom of information. This is when she began working with NASA to get the Keksberg files released and stuff like that. But she had a kickoff sort of a press conference with the Sci-Fi Channel, and John Podesta was there. And he pretty much, you know, said very clearly that I think the government needs to release all the information it has on UFOs. So that was really cool. And he's just someone who's really into the topic. He's written like a preface for Leslie Kane about her book. And he's been supportive of her work all along. So now he is going to be an advisor for Obama. He's one of the official named advisors that has come on board at the White House. And hopefully, it's exciting because he's a UFO enthusiast. And it's one cool thing, too, about this is that Lee Spiegel wrote a story on this for the Huffington Post, and that's gone somewhat viral. Some of the bigger news sources picked this up. So it lends for the chance on him making a comment about UFOs or maybe even Obama being pressed to do so more, because Obama's done so recently, even talking about Area 51 kind of in a joking manner. Some people feel that hopefully this will kind of be the impetus for some sort of UFO disclosure. I'm not so sure about that because, of course, Clinton was interested in UFOs. And Clinton did look into UFOs, but of course we never had any major disclosure happen then. And this president does not seem to be interested in UFOs except for the comedy that it provides. He's joked about it a few times. So beyond making some opportunities to make a few more jokes, I don't think Obama's necessarily keen to release any big secrets or anything. But it may, you know, make more conversation about the topic.
Right. We can certainly hope for that. You know, it's certainly better to have somebody like this
right.
who has Obama's ear, somebody who's, you know, a friend to the topic. But again, Alejandro, it feels like deja vu. We've been down this road before. Disclosure advocates, disclosure hopefuls, I guess. You know, we're raising this issue back when he was helping Obama transition into the White House. You know, they thought, oh, look, Podesta's there. That means Obama's going to be the disclosure president. Here we go. But nothing seemed to come of that.
Right.
So if this time around something more happens, but we've been here before.
Yeah, and good point. And not only that, you know, people jump to, because there's already been some people that this definitely means
right.
there's going to be disclosure. Certainly does not definitely mean anything, but it's a good thing.
It is a good thing, and yeah, his forward to Leslie Kane's book, UFOs, General Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. It's an interesting forward, so that's a good read, and yeah, no, it's definitely a plus having him in that position.
Right, yep, so pretty cool stuff. So you were correct. That is my news story for the week.
Yes.
All right, so without further ado, let's go ahead and talk to Damian Lopez. I am really happy to have with me Damian Lopez. Hello, Damian.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, good. So I'm glad you got a hold of me because you have this really cool project going on, this Tell Me a Story, and it's a Kickstarter for something new and innovative you're trying to do kind of in the world of comics.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, it's this project. It's an interactive, animated online comic that will put the reader in the role of the central character who inhabits this bizarre alternate universe that's inhabited by a variety of aliens.
Mm-hmm. Now, and to kind of get an idea of how it works, that people, like now, you know, people more and more are going online to read comics and you know, they see the panel of the artwork, but this is going to have the panels along with, and you've got some examples here on your Kickstarter where you can push some portions that will have video, and the videos are kind of in different formats like than people are used to, which makes it a lot of fun. And then eventually they'll also run across periods or portions of the story where they'll kind of be able to choose their own adventure and they click whether they want to go this way or that way.
Right, that's exactly right. So if you think about it as your standard sort of third-person open world format game, like a Skyrim or a GTA or Mass Effect, which the Mass Effect series were very influential in the later development of this project, you will control the movements of the character within the different environments. And within those environments, there will be, particularly right now, characters to interact with. And as you interact with them, you will explore all these creatures, the way they interact, the way they communicate is through memories and thought and imagery. So when you interact with them, you're interacting within a memory. that you're experiencing, either something from their past or something, a shared moment that you experienced. And those stories will be told in a comic, mostly comic format, in that we will have the traditional broken up panels, but we will also have animated panels seamlessly integrated, so it's not going to be like a video link that you click and go to YouTube. You'll see animated loop sequences right there within the main page. And then to add another, the other level on top of that, choose your own adventure level, is within those comics there will be some points where you'll have alternate options that will diverge, create diverse stories a little bit. And also as far as who you interact with before you enter the comics when you're in the main sort of map area, who you interact with, who you develop relationships with, that sort of thing.
Cool. So, and it also looks like there's a lot of artists involved, so that people won't be experiencing just one person to art, but lots of different styles.
Correct. One of the aspects of this is one of the aspects of this project is that, and it kind of comes together with my research of the UFO and contactee phenomenon in and of itself. I'll just go on that for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Many people experience many different things. The experiences can be anything from a complete, fantasy, where they're just everything is completely allegorical, to something very real and concrete where, it's like it's almost as if it's mundane. The experience can almost be described as mundane. So in that regard, in trying to bring sort of that element of my interest and that aspect of the experience, I wanted to bring in other voices, other creative voices, to lend their talents, so that the reader can have, can have that extra sort of incentive, that extra sort of interest in where the story develops, because they can follow certain artists or particular characters, maybe linked to a particular artist, or that they'll just get to see the same character in a new style, in a new way. Even the design of the character is left very ambiguous, so that the reader and whatever creator signs on is able to add their own sort of their own self, their own element of themselves. Not that it's a rigid thing that everyone has to work within my style.
Mm-hmm.
This project is very much not about it being my story. It is, but I very much am planning on and would like to see this grow to a point where fans can contribute stories that are accessible, and therefore become part of the overall experience.
Yeah, which is really cool because it just seems so expandable that you can have just tons of different stories. It could go on forever, essentially.
That right now would be a dream. Maybe it'd be a monster in reality, but as of right now, like that to me is the goal, where, it's not just you're picking up a book to read it or a comic to read it. You're engaging in an experience. You're engaging in other people's acts of creation. You're creating yourself by choosing which stories you decide to partake in.
What else is, I think, kind of cool is that it's just, which is always exciting, it feels like, comics, of course, that we see online have come from the kind of the 2D world, and they've kind of reproduced the two-dimensional onto just some websites with their art and everything. But this is kind of utilizing all of the technology that your computer or that the web offers to incorporate it and to take it all kind of to a new level.
Thank you. I'm glad that's coming through. That's definitely been a goal. Like you say, I've seen, already some of the bigger publishers are getting into doing motion comics, what they call motion comics. They're just that. It's like the cutout of their drawn character doing a zoom or enlarging to make it look like it's coming at you. I saw one where, like, they built all these CG models for the characters and then animated them as if they were, you know, robots. And it just never felt like they were utilizing the technology that's available. I really wanted to make it feel like a complete experience, and so I've really taken a lot of time to kind of find process and programs that can work, which is sort of ironic because I'm not even that technologically inclined, and I definitely need the assistance of more developed people, you know. But also, you know, so like staying on top of what is actually people are using and what people are, you know, creating. Like I had not heard of HTML5 till maybe like a year or two ago. And prior to that, I just figured this whole thing was going to happen in Flash, and I was teaching myself to work in Flash. Once I heard of HTML5 and saw what HTML5 could do, I knew that that would be the way to bring everything together, because even Flash had its limitations. Thankfully, with an HTML5 programmer, I'm able to, you know, really bring together all these elements.
Yeah, really cool. And so then getting into some of this is propelled by your UFO and alien interests. And is it story or mostly characters that are driven by what you've learned looking into UFO material?
It's particularly characters.
Uh-huh.
I've had an interest in, you know, UFOs and aliens since I was a little kid. You know, those things, them and dinosaurs. I mean, what can stir a little kid's mind more? You know, but it was always just kind of like on the periphery. As I've gotten older, and I've studied up on it more and read more about cases, and you know, the science itself has even developed and expanded. You know, I've come to appreciate more of the personal stories of people's experiences, you know, with actual beings, and the richness in the diversity of the experiences that entails, you know, the complete horror of some people's experiences to, you know, absolute ecstasy in others. And through it all, there's this, I found, you know, this underlying theme that these are, whatever's happening, whatever's out there, you know, these are beings with motivations, with drives, with impulses, that they're not the cartoons that are more often than not represented in popular media. So it was important for me to represent that aspect of the UFO alien field study, whatever you want to call it, because it's underplayed more often than not. An alien, you know, if an alien's in a comic or a cartoon or anything, they're, you know, here to kill us or take our women or, you know, who knows what else. They're simple. They're basic, and you know that speaks to certain things about us. But I think that there's a lot more that we can experience. Also, by making all the characters aliens, I saw it as an opportunity to kind of create a broader reflection of ourselves. Many of the concept designs for the aliens not only are based on characteristics that are described by contactees, but I also dress them up in different outfits from around the world, from around the globe, to represent that they have cultures, that they have lives, that they have stories to tell. They're not just these naked, big-eyed, big-headed things that, you know, we can't understand at all, that there is some common ground, that there is some universality.
Mm-hmm. And so, and you even talk about this in here that on the Kickstarter, that these creatures are kind of modeled after the Greys, and as you mentioned, they all have different motivations that are varied, different cultures, different fashion, just like on the planet, just like you're kind of mentioning here. So you're bringing in, which I think is also, yeah, a pretty cool, all of the different complexities, like you said, that are seen in the UFO material.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, especially having done the research, it's kind of like anything else. It's a Pandora's box. Once you open it up, and you really see kind of what's going on, there's almost too much to handle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in that way, it's understandable that people keep it very much at an arm's length, and it's like, you know, it's almost easier to just think they're here to just cut out organs or something. But, you know, it's so much more interesting, so much richer, so much, you know, more frightening and uplifting than any of that. Even if you wanted to take it as source material, I presented it to some of the members of my team who are not as avid into ufology as I am, and just looking at it at a glance, their imaginations began just boiling over.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's almost like, even from that perspective, you know, you don't want to take it seriously, you just want to market it. Why just reserve it to, you know, they're here to blow up the planet? There's so much more you can do.
Mm-hmm. So with you, when you first got into all of this, how did that come about? So you were a kid, you always kind of had an interest, and then did you start reading books and stuff like that?
When I was a kid, if I read, most of my readings then had more to do with the particular monsters like Loch Ness or Bigfoot,
uh-huh,
or mythical creatures. I really, when I was a kid, my study was pretty much restricted to sightings and unsolved mysteries and,
mm,
you know, those kind of TV shows. Some stuff when I had the internet and it first came out, occasionally I would check out a UFO site. It wasn't until later on, when I was the very early stages of developing this concept, and, you know, I had always had an interest in sci-fi, and I want to do a story about aliens, but I don't want to just make them people dressed like aliens, and I don't want to just make them, you know, Hollywood aliens. So I went back, and I went back to, you know, the old stuff, the stuff that held my interest as a kid, and really started looking into it. So I started reading some of the books and about the cases, the Betty and Barney Hill. Is it Hill, I believe?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Right, that case, and, you know, like John Mack and David Icke, the Disclosure Project was a huge just sort of aha moment with their presidential briefing. It was amazingly dry, but amazingly amazing. Jim Marr's book, Alien Agenda, just like had a huge, you know, bank of information for me to just kind of go off of.
Mm-hmm.
And Whitley Strieber, I remember actually that was sort of a double hit because Communion was the first movie I saw that took treated aliens in a serious light. You know, I was very young. It was also the first movie I saw with Christopher Walken. And so
really?
I've forever been in love with him. Yeah. So I've pretty much been forever in love with him since then.
So, and have you ever had your own sighting?
You know, I've seen a couple of things that were odd, but nothing that I would ever honestly say, like, that was definitely that. There are definitely a couple moments I saw something moving in a you know, in a straight line, but in a strange direction against the wind and glowing weirdly and not making a sound. But, you know, it didn't zigzag or anything, so it's hard for me to say 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't know. Anything's possible. That's kind of the craziest thing, too, is from reading some of this stuff, from what some people say, it's like we could all be visited regularly and not even have a clue, and that's really interesting to think about.
Right. So when it comes to some of these stories, you know, as you talked about, some of the angles that some of the researchers take is everything's really positive. Others say everything's really negative. But you're kind of representing at least it in your stories. And do you feel it's kind of all of the above, like there could be some good, some bad?
When I try to think of it, I try to think of it from a scientific perspective as much as for the amateur scientist that I, you know, quote unquote am. And I look to people who approach it from a more scientific perspective. So like people like Stanton Friedman You know, and I can't remember his name right now, but there's a gentleman who really pushes exobiology, you know, and basically, you know, their position is that these are just cultures. These are just creatures with different cultures. And in that regard, there will be some who are 100% in line and some who are not. There will be some cultures that are more interested in personal development. There will be others who are more interested in technological development. And so, you know, if anything, that would be what I would want to bring into my story, to bring into my characters, is that like anyone else, anywhere else that you'll find, you know, these are creatures like you and me that want one thing or don't want something else. And, you know, they're just driven, like all life is, to do one thing or another. You know, but, and there's a complexity, there's a past, there's a history. So, yeah, I you know, it's the fantastic aspects, a lot of the, you know, the future technologies, the things that just are beyond belief. I hope to represent some of those in very mundane ways in this story, present them almost in very matter-of-fact concepts, because that's the world that these creatures are used to. The part that I want to be sort of the opening part, the expanding part, is the part where we treat these creatures as if they're actual characters, as if they're actual beings.
Mm-hmm. What's fun about that, too, is where you mentioned kind of mundane, I think it's at least maybe story-wise you see it as simple or something, but the artwork is so complex and it's so, like, mysterious. You know, it adds a lot of complexity on its own, I think, and mystery, in that the artwork is busy and kind of, like, so... The scenes seem so large in that there's a lot going on and in the distance going off. So it feels, you know, like an air of real mystery and complexity, and that's what makes a lot of fun, too.
Cool. Great. I'm glad. That's all excellent. That's exactly what I was going for. You know, again, in reading some of these accounts and trying to conceive of, you know, a rationale for them, for lack of a better word, you know, going back to the Hill case, when one of the things that struck me and still, you know, is very powerful for me is Betty recalled being asked by one of the creatures, what is time? They showed her a watch. They were like, what is this? And she's like, it's a watch. It's for telling time. Like, what is time?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's like, you know, what would that be like to not have a concept of time? And you think about that. And of course, you know, they're laughed at because it seems like such a basic concept for us. And then you find out that, you know, science is saying that, hey, outside of Earth's atmosphere, time reacts differently. So what would it be like? How does one lose the concept of one moment to another? And in that, by thinking of that, by trying to kind of deconstruct that moment, that notion, came to this point where I created this universe, this fractalverse, as I call it, where these beings escape to and now live, which is, you know, beyond any, you know, the known realities. It's kind of like it's the inception of all realities, and that they are there. They're outside of anything that anything experiences. So they see dimensions, you know, birth and die before their very eyes. Therefore losing any concept of what a moment is like.
Mm-hmm. With what you're working on now, is there like a storyline? So as the viewer interacting, kind of what is the initial storyline?
The initial storyline is that you are about to leave the Fractalverse. This is the moments before you're about to leave. And at first you'll be presented with, you'll see two characters who are there to basically say goodbye, and you will engage with them. And depending on those choices from the very beginning, that will dictate which characters you'll be exposed to and what relationships you'll be able to develop from there. And then the story will progress through the readers exploring of their memories with other characters. So, you know, in that, so, and that's why another reason to create this sort of expandable universe, I decided to use this, tell this part of the story in the past through memories. You know, because that way you can pass someone at one moment and maybe you didn't talk to them another, and then, you know, it kind of makes for a great sort of device to then explore that relationship because you remember at a different time you did go and talk to them or something like that. So as you're exploring all these relationships and interacting with these beings, they will reappear in the present. And when they're there in the present, you'll then have an opportunity to continue exploring more memories with those different memories, different stories with those beings. And all of this is the main storyline, is that you are exposing, the reader is exposing what the character has learned about their past. You are not like the other creatures in this universe. You are different from the rest of them. You are unique. You have a connection to their past, and the reader does not know that from the beginning, so that's the purpose of going back and exploring these relationships to kind of discover what brought you to this point where you're about to leave. And then hopefully, if we get this this first part funded, the second part will see the reader take their character outside of the Fractalverse and begin exploring actual dimensions. And there we'll really get to expand the story in the universe, where I hope to have parallel storylines running based on readers' choices.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. And so you have a Kickstarter to get this first part done, and it seems to be doing pretty well so far.
We've definitely got some good supporters. You know, it's hard to tell. It's my first Kickstarter. So to me, I just see the kind of the clock ticking. You know, we definitely could use some more support. People, you know, spreading the word, all of that helps. You know, but yeah, I've definitely been very pleased and touched by some of the donations from people, and gotten a lot of support from my friends and family so far. So.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like you're about not quite a quarter of the way, huh? About a fifth of the way. But you still have 22 days to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
in that time, I'm planning some in-store appearances. I'm here local in Portland. I'm also going to be flying into New York for a couple of weeks to visit friends and family. So I'm making plans for in-store appearances there to help promote it. There's also I'm putting together a party. It's a little close, it's cutting a little close, but January 3rd, if you're in Portland, come to the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne, and we'll have a Kickstarter promotion party there. There's going to be art, animation, special prizes for people who become backers on the scene. We'll have entertainers and everything, so it'll be cool.
Cool. And then what are some of, like, the pledge levels and what people
pledge,
get?
Mm-hmm. I remember a few of them. I don't always remember all the pledge levels, but
yeah,
I know
there's
that,
a lot of them.
One that I'm really excited of, and I hope people are excited for too, is at the $30 level. People will get a drawing of themselves as an alien from the universe, from the Tell Me a Story universe. That to me is a fun one, because that's how I started developing most of these characters, is just by doing quick sketches of portraits or photos that I found. So we also have
So that's cool. And will it be like in this gray kind of format where...
Well, and at the $30 level, it will be a original hand-drawn pencil sketch.
So what they would look like as like a gray alien.
Right, exactly. So
cool.
They'll send me a photo, and I'll draw them, you know, with their outfit, whatever outfit they have on. So if people want to put on a funky outfit, that'll make it even more interesting.
Cool.
And then, at the $750 level, we will put that character, we'll color that character and put them in the background. They'll be an actual background character. And then at the $1,000 level, that character will get their own story that a backer will get to create. If they so choose. I know some people can be a little intimidated by that, and if that's the case, then please, we will just guide you, we'll help you, or you can edit us, whatever. But I would like people to start getting used to the idea of being a part of this story.
Well, and that's what's cool about the idea, like you said, with him coming across and getting these memories, is that all of these are kind of their own self-contained stories that could be done by any artist, but then it introduces you and takes you into kind of this new world, and which then, if like you're talking about happens, you know, you have lots of different experiences and stories going on there.
Yeah, and I would really love to see, like, you know, maybe a character that just was a background character ends up, you know, people really like their story. And so maybe people get to add more stories to that particular character, add more experiences there. I mean, things like that, I would very much like to see, you know, kind of this project take a life of its own.
Cool. And then just so people know, I mean, that's what's cool too, is you offer pledge levels. You have a ton of them, but they start as low as like $2. But that $30 to get a sketch of themselves is a pretty good deal.
Thanks. I'm glad you think so. I mean, we have, you know, tons of like prints and posters and signed stuff. You know, at the going even higher, just past the $1,000 or the $2,000 level, where I will actually send you one of the original concepts notebooks, one of my sketchbooks full of concept drawings and designs and story notes and all that stuff. But you know, I definitely want to make it accessible so that, you know, people who maybe they just see the interest, but they're not, you know, they can't commit, or it's Christmas and we all have, you know, we all split a million different ways, but they really want to, you know, support it. You know, really anything helps, any little bit helps. And the good thing about Kickstarter is, you know, no one's on the hook. If it doesn't go through, no big deal.
Right. And so
well, for you guys.
If they go to Kickstarter.com, I think they can just search for Tell Me a Story and your project will come up.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So,
Tell Me a Story or Jersey Boy PDX is my handle.
Okay.
So, but yeah, Tell Me a Story would be the easiest.
Okay. And it's a lot of fun because you have like this huge Kickstarter page with lots of your art, several different videos that people can watch, different kind of ideas for layouts and stuff like this. And it's bigger than most Kickstarter pages, but it's fun because it shows that you have a lot of ideas and a lot of kind of exciting ways of presenting the information, which it's a really fun page to kind of click around.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm glad to, you know, I'm really glad to hear you say that. It definitely was important that people felt engaged in what I had produced so far. So that they could hopefully see where it can go in the future. And if I may just say that people want to see other examples, there are links all over the Kickstarter if you click on some of the highlighted stuff. But in particular, if you want to just jump ahead, I have some finished sample pages. They were test pages from when I was kind of getting the process down. If you go to tellmeastory.smackjeeves.com, you can see there are five all the completely different sample pages that I've done. Also, I have a blog spot my development blog. It's interactive animated sci-fi.blogspot.com. And I try to keep regular with that. It's been a little tough, you know, with getting word out for the Kickstarter, but there I try to put regular updates and you can see more concept art that isn't on the Kickstarter.
Cool, yeah, and I noticed you have, at least I see the sample pages link here. I looked through those, and that's exciting, too. I mean, I guess that's the HTML5, but how you can have these panels, like, independently have animation inside of them is super cool, just really cool.
That was actually, thank you, those were actually originally done in Flash.
Oh, really?
Flash. Yeah, no, the HTML5 is something I haven't even, I'm working with my programmer now. I'm actually going to call him after I get off the phone with you. We're going to talk about, we're building a demo now. So hopefully within the next week or so, we'll have at the very least a link to something that people will actually get to use and really see what we want to put together.
Awesome. Well, it looks like a lot of fun, and thanks for letting me know, and thanks for coming on the show and sharing this with us. Hopefully people will go check it out, because at the very least, it's a really fun page to go look at, and hopefully people will back you and your project will go forward, because I think it seems to be like, you know, a new, exciting way for comics to go online.
Cool. Thank you so much. Yeah, I really, you know, I appreciate the support. I'm so glad that you gave me this opportunity to speak with your audience. And yes, please go check out the page. You know, even if you can't support it, send it to your friends. Share it with them, because that's how this works. It's
right.
All about getting the word out.
All right. Well, cool, man. You have some nice holidays, and hopefully as soon as the holidays are over here, you'll have another big present in that you'll have your project funded and you'll have some work to do.
Yeah, hopefully. Keep busy, right?
Yep. All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you, Alejandro.
All right. So thank you very much to Damien. I think his project is really cool, and I really encourage people to go check out his Kickstarter page, because there's lots of videos, lots of artwork, and it's like, it, you know, you'll have like 45 minutes of fun just going through and looking at everything he's posted here. Lots of really cool stuff, especially for UFO enthusiasts, because he has lots of alien pictures and alien drawings, and it's extremely creative. And like he said, it's interesting to think about, like, the different outfits that have been reported and that they may wear. What do aliens wear? I mean, that's kind of interesting. He mentioned alien fashion and what that might be like, and his different ideas about that, where he has these pictures with all kinds of different kinds of outfits to show what people have reported, but also to kind of speculate on what else might be out there. So it's an interesting aspect of what might that be like when we ever meet extraterrestrials. So some really cool stuff. So remember, you can go to Kickstarter and just in the search, which is right on the top, the search projects, just type in Tell Me a Story and you'll find that. So thanks to Damien. So I want to mention a couple other things. Last week we had mentioned that Maureen was going to be on a TV show on Animal Planet called Uncovering Aliens. So that aired late last night, and so that was a lot of fun. And Maureen came across, like, I think, like the big expert on the show. So she came across really great. So that's exciting, because, of course, it's kind of nerve-wracking to see what's going to happen and what the producers are going to do. So I thought it was really cool. No offense to the other guys on the show, you know, some of them who are friends. I think Maureen was my favorite on the show. She came across really cool. So we'll see if that show continues. But it was cool that Animal Planet aired that. Otherwise, I also want to share a bit of unfortunate news, and that is that UFO researcher Lloyd Pye passed away recently on December 9th, actually. We posted a video. Tom, you know, our video guy, put together some interviews that we have with him, and luckily we were able to get some great interviews because we had him at the Congress recently, and so some really cool stuff that you haven't seen before, that nobody's seen before, interviews with Lloyd Pye. So go check that out. Of course, you can find that at openminds.tv or on our YouTube and find out more information. And then you can go on our Facebook and you can see how to send your condolences to the family. And, of course, our condolences go out to them. So, yeah, very sad situation that, unfortunately, Lloyd Pye has passed away. And speaking about the UFO Congress, of course, that is coming up. That is going to be February 12th through the 16th. So it's really like 2 months away. It's actually less than 2 months away, which adds more stress to our holidays, as if the holidays aren't stressful enough. But excitement as well, because it's going to be a lot of fun. So we actually saw some friends this weekend. We went to... Jason and I went to Las Vegas to see Lee Spiegel and other friends who are going to be there. And that's one of the fun things, is just getting together with people maybe you don't get to see all of the time other people who are into the topic that maybe you just see once a year at the UFO Congress, or if you can only make it to the Congress every other year, then every other year. But also lots of speakers, because of course, as I'm sure you all have found, you know, once you go to a few conferences and spend a lot of time talking with some of the speakers and researchers, you kind of become buddies. And you have these new online friends that you carry on relationships online and talk about, you know, our interests in all of this stuff. So you get to see some of your friends, so, which is certainly the case for all of us. So really excited about it, really excited to see some of you all. And it's really cool, you know, come up if you listen to the show and say hi. It's really, it's inspiring when we hear from people who listen to the show who just say thank you or watch the website, which is really neat. But we have some great researchers. Of course, we have George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM. We've got Timothy Good, who's got a new book out, and a researcher everybody likes, A Lot of Science, with Jeffrey Bennett and Richard Hoover. We have some great research, like on triangular UFOs, from David Marler. Another recent guest, of course, Artie Sixkiller, talking about Native American stories. We've even integrated Bigfoot, and we're going to have a really cool debate with some people who, all of them believe in UFOs, but in the government's role, is it more mundane, or is there a lot of major secrets going on? So we have people in both camps that are going to talk about that. We have Timothy Good and Stephen Bassett in the camp of, you know, the major conspiracies, and we have John Alexander and MUFON's director of research who feel that it's not as big of a conspiracy as people may think. And so we'll be talking about that, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And really exciting, we have George Knapp coming to talk about Bob Lazar, because it's been 25 years since the Bob Lazar story came out and put Area 51 on the map, and now we have, you know, Obama talking about it 25 years later. So really exciting stuff. So you can go to ufocongress.com, or of course, for all of this news and everything, you can go to openminds.tv. You'll also be able to see the latest episode of Spacing Out, which is Jason and Maureen going over all of the UFO news of the week. So check out openminds.tv. Again, happy holidays to everyone, and I want to thank the guys who donated the music, Caleb Hanks, who did the intro music, and Two Earth Minutes, who do the close. So thank you all so much for listening. I hope you have a great holidays. And, of course, next week is a holiday, so we'll be back in a couple weeks. Have a great time. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll talk to you in a couple weeks, people. Adios, muchachos. We'll be right back.